Hello and welcome to the Convex Conversation with me, journalist Helen Fospero. More people have climbed Everest than have rode the Atlantic. Both are grueling and life-threatening challenges, but the sea brings other dangers. Storms with waves of more than 10 metres, no emergency support boats, and extreme sleep deprivation. Today I'm in Plymouth to meet an extraordinary team of young Marines who have just joined that elite club. They rowed more than 3,000 miles in a small boat from Gran Canaria to Barbados in 49 days, 19 hours and 45 minutes for very special and personal reasons. And in doing so, they've raised more than £50,000 so far for the Royal Marines charity under the Cockleshell Endeavour banner. We're at the Box Maritime Museum and I'd like to introduce you to Royal Marine Commandos Sam Edwards and David Bruce and Afghanistan veterans Junior McElhinney and Will Schwepp. Congratulations to all of you for such an amazing challenge. There are so many different ways of raising money for charity. Brucey, tell us, why did you choose to row the Atlantic?
We chose to row the Atlantic for a bit of a personal challenge to raise money for the Royal Marines charity and to keep the flag of the Cockleshell Endeavour flying.
Did you feel daunted by the 3,000 mile trek and knowing that so few people managed to achieve it?
No, not particularly, because a few of our peers have rowed the oceans and the whole process leading up to it was fraught with problems. So we're just overcoming little hurdles at a time. And it was almost as much a relief getting the boat to the start line as it was to get it to the finish line.
Well, it was very personal for you. You were a serving Marine and were honourably discharged after you were injured in Afghanistan. Just tell us a bit about that and why it was such a special thing to do.
Yeah, well, that all happened quite a few years ago now. I was injured in 2011. And spent the rest of my career in and out of hospital and rehab. But then obviously eventually was medically discharged, which was in 2013. So been like 7 years since I'd sort of been a Marine and obviously had to adjust to being a regular civilian again and, you know, find a new purpose and direction. So when this opportunity came up with the lads, you know, I said yes straight away because it was just an amazing opportunity for me to represent the Marines again and do something hoofing with the lads.
And presumably, Will, to raise money for a charity that helped you in your rehabilitation.
Yeah, of course. It is great to be able to do that, to obviously in the future help others who may have gone down a similar path to me. So to be able to do it for that reason as well is obviously fantastic.
Can you tell us just a little bit of what happened to you in Afghanistan so we sort of understand how important that charity was to you?
Yeah, well, deployed with Junior. We both were in the same company together, J Company, with 4-2 Commando. Deployed in March 2011 on Herrick 14, and it was my first tour. I think I was only a year out of training. 4 months into the tour, I got shot by a sniper in quite an intense firefight. Obviously, I got taken off the ground straight away by an American rescue team. Came in, picked me up in the helo, flew me straight back to Camp Bastion, which is like the main military HQ in Afghanistan. And then, yeah, went straight into surgery, was put to sleep straight away, and then woke up in Birmingham, Queen Elizabeth Hospital, and then started my recovery journey, I guess, which was going to be for the remainder of my career as a Marine.
Junior, you were on that tour, and you were badly injured too, weren't you?
Yeah, it was my second tour. And yeah, I was involved in an explosion 3 months into the tour, where I was on top cover in a Mastiff, hit by a rather large mine, which ejected me from the vehicle itself and then ended up trapped back on the roof under some heavy armour. Again, I was picked up by Pedro and flown back to Camp Bastion, where I refused to come back to England. They were going to fly me back with the rest of the lads I was injured with and sort of kicked off a bit of a fuss, saying, keep me in hospital for a couple of weeks here, I'm going to make a full recovery and I'll get back on the ground. But unfortunately, I think it was like 2 weeks later, and like, you're not going to make a recovery here. We've got to send you back to England. We can't send in a BCR, battle casualty replacement, until you return back to England. So it was a bit, I don't know, selfish of myself to try and stay out there, leaving my section of man down. It was quite devastating news when they said we had to fly back to England. But yeah, I got back to my unit and started the recovery process then, where I was selected after a year. Being back at 4-2, I was selected to go down to a Royal Marines rehabilitation unit at Hasler Company, where I'd carry out the rest of my career rehabilitating. And then, unfortunately, in 2015, was medically discharged because I couldn't carry out my career as a Royal Marine anymore.
It must have been, you know, devastating for you both, very severe injuries and dreadful to come out of the Marines. But how special and pertinent did it feel for you to do this incredible challenge, knowing that every penny you raise goes to the Royal Marines charity and will help other people like you and Will?
Yeah, in fact, it feels amazing, especially during COVID times. I think a lot of charities have been struggling. And out of 3 Royal Marine ocean rowing teams this year, we managed to make it happen. I have no idea how, because during the whole process, Bruce and Natty will say this row could have been cancelled at any given moment. The row could have just been, it's not happening. And it was only until the day of the row when we got in the boat, I was like, right, this is happening now. But it felt absolutely amazing to make this happen and to be able to raise a little bit of money so the Royal Marines charity can carry out their good work, where they've been helping more people more than ever during COVID times and have not really been able to have the funds to do so, but they've been helping more people out than ever. So it felt great. Felt really great.
Nutty, for you, what did this whole team feel like?
It was a strong, bonded team. Get on very well, go out drinking, stuff like that, and just got to know each other really, really well over the years. And I must admit, I didn't know Will that well, but bonded very well over the few months previous. Well, it was about half a year, actually, previous to actually going on the row. So, yeah, strong team, good bunch of lads, and we're all Royal Marines at the end of the day as well. So, yeah, it's good. We've got a common... What's the word?
Bond.
Common bond.
Common bond, yeah. I think. Brucey, what about the training for this? What did that involve to make sure that, you know, I'm guessing as Marines, you'd be pretty fit anyway, but was there some special training involved because of the endurance factor of it?
Yeah, for sure there was. So we took the training very seriously. So it wasn't all physical. The physical training we did a lot of, like a lot of compound movements, like deadlifts, for example, to build up the strength for the posterior train to prevent injury whilst rowing. But it was also like academic training, which we did the Royal Yachting Association qualifications up to Ocean Master Theory, which is using the sextant and navigating from celestial bodies. The rowing technique in the boat is easy enough, but it took a bit of getting used to. So we took the boat out for a few spins. The money was the hardest thing because the row itself cost quite a lot of money. So we were approaching sponsorships who were potential sponsors. And it was just a huge learning process for us to get the pitch right, to persuade people to give us their money so we could row the ocean.
And how did the rowing, Brucey, actually work? How did you divvy it all up once you're at sea?
So the traditional routine for ocean rowers is 3-on, 2-on, 2-off. But when it started getting stormy and we're getting in and out of foul weather gear, we changed it to 3-on, 3-off to minimise the change over time. And then the performance didn't actually deteriorate that much throughout the extra hour. So we essentially doing 4 shifts a day instead of 6.
So 3 hours on and then 3 hours sleep.
Resting, yeah.
Will, you set off in calm waters, but very, very quickly experienced what were probably some of the worst storms of the whole trip. Can you describe what that was like and how you felt the first time you saw waves of potentially 10 metres high?
Yeah, it's quite difficult to explain because it was something we've obviously been preparing for such a long time. I think it was definitely over a year since I joined the team anyway, till we actually set off. So it's one of those things, you can't really prepare for it until you're in there doing it. And in that moment, you just try and forget about it and just concentrate on one oar stroke at a time and get to the end of the day and then get to the next day and then get to the next day. But in the storm, it was just obviously a baptism by fire. We were all wondering if that's what it's going to be like for the next 50 days. Thankfully, we did have a bit of calm weather as well, but yeah, it's something else, seeing such power from the ocean and being in a small boat and just getting it full on. Some of the waves were like a steam train hitting the boat, just a really loud noise. You know, you're underwater almost when the wave's going over you, and then it's quite disorientating and difficult to get used to, but we did. And then it prepared us all mentally. We were all a lot more confident after that in ourselves. We and the boat can withstand that sort of thing. So any more storms that we encountered, we were prepared for it.
On that initial storm, Will, were you all frightened at any point? I mean, did you feel that the boat might capsize or that was just too much to take from Mother Nature?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't frightened. It's funny, you know, when you're in that sort of situation, you either crumble or you just crack on, and you just got to crack on. Otherwise, there's no way you can crumble because you've only just set off. And, you know, we're not going to turn around and go back because we've got to, you know, we all anticipated it. You know, we know that it's going to be rough weather at some point. It just happened to be at the beginning, unfortunately, but that's the way it was. So you just got to crack on.
Junior, that rough weather did come much quicker than expected, didn't it? What are your memories? Because it is actually difficult sitting here. I can't imagine what it would look or feel like to have walls of water coming at you like that. Can you describe it?
Yeah, it was just a shock to the system. We set off on a beautiful, calm day. The sun was out, the sea was flat. And me and Will got our heads down in the cabin for a few hours before we'd come out onto our first shift. And when I come out, it was dark. There was waves crashing into the boat. There were lads screaming at each other. And I felt like I was back in a war zone. Like, quick, change over, quick, get up. It was just like, it was mental. I genuinely felt like I was back in a war zone. Just that, I don't know, shell shock, maybe like a shell shock. I was just looking at these waves coming at me. And within the first shift, I tore loads of skin off my feet, which was agony for like about the first 2 weeks. It took about 2 weeks to heal. Yeah, it was definitely a bit of shell shock. And I was like, what? And you could see Gran Canaria still. And the thought was in my head, do I ask the lads if we can turn around? Can we go back? Is this too late? Them words never came out of my mouth, but the thoughts were in my head. I was like, oh my God. I've never rode an ocean before. I thought maybe it's going to be like this the whole time. But when that storm disappeared and we had a few nice days, I'd just tell myself every single day, I'd tell myself, this is my life now. This is going to be my life. I'm going to row, I'm going to eat, I'm going to clean, I'm going to sleep. And yeah, this would be my life now for the foreseeable future.
You become an old sea dog very quickly. Nutty, what went through your mind when you were being lashed by water?
I was thinking, oh God, it's water for the beard. It's going to make it even thicker. It's going to make it grow. It was like, how would I describe it? Like a 49-day log flume ride. It's just getting water everywhere.
Except the car's going in the opposite direction to where we wanted it to go.
You're getting water just splashed at you and stuff like that. But no, it's good. That storm was a bit of a shock to the system, but yeah, it's all right.
When you told friends and family, Brucey, what you were going to take on, what was their reaction? And were they nervous of stuff just like that? Of, you know, you're being battered by wicked storms out there.
My family and friends have always been incredibly supportive of everything that I've done. And this one was no different. If they were nervous about it, they wouldn't tell me, which is the way I like it anyway. So
what would you say?
My mother probably would. In fact, I'm pretty sure she was nervous, but she would never tell me that she was nervous.
That's pretty cool, though, that she wouldn't tell you, that she lets you go off and, I know you're a grown man, she lets you go off, but it's nice that she didn't put her fears upon you, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, she's good like that. Really good.
Give us a sense, Will, of what day-to-day life was like and the sort of relationship and the sort of chemistry between you all on board and how you managed food-wise and banter-wise and everything else.
We got into the swing of it after about a week or so. Because obviously it's quite a strange living environment because we're all quite big lads and living on such a small boat was quite difficult. I mean, it was difficult the whole way, but you do get used to it. And it's, you know, funny how you adapt to things really quickly. Little things you don't think of, like, you know, you couldn't stand up, or when you're cooking, you got to do it on your knees and your boat's rocking around and you're trying not to get water in the cabin. And then you've got to pour boiling water into the bag and then zip it up and then hand it out to the lads. The toilet's just a black bucket, which can only be used in one position, which is on the deck in full view of your rowing partner. So your dignity gets left on land. So there's no dignity whatsoever. Everything, you know, you've always got the threat of being soaked when you're trying to do anything. You know, like when we started making coffees of an evening towards the end of the trip, I don't know why we didn't start doing that earlier, but it was great morale. But, you know, you've got to try and make a coffee on the deck when it's potentially quite turbulent, and trying to protect the coffee from getting salt water before it's even been made is quite a challenge, but it was worth it. It was definitely an experience that I'll remember for the rest of my life, and I'm sure I'll take it with me to my grave thinking about it. I'm glad that we all did it and experienced it together.
You mentioned the food there and pouring hot water in a bag. What was the food like? Is it sort of dried stuff that you use on board?
Yeah, we had military rations, which is like freeze-dried food. I didn't tire of it at all. I don't know about you lads, but I really enjoyed the food right up until the end.
I may jump in there. I'm going to jump in there, Will. I didn't tire of all. Mr. Will, who...
There was only one meal I didn't like because I was sick. The black bean chicken noodles came up.
What a waste of black bean chicken, so I'd the black say. Bean,
but no one liked it.
No one liked it.
Junior loved it. I don't know what
no one liked it. No one liked it at all. But me being nice, Right, no, it was the worst meal to have because, for starters, like you pour the hot water in and the other meals could be ready in like a couple of minutes, but this one would take about 20 minutes to soak up the water to make it actually edible. So you'd get it and you have 5 minutes to eat it before you come on shift. And Will didn't like it. I didn't realise that Brucey didn't like it towards the end either. And there was one day Will give me free, or on one like 5 day period, I think I had that same meal, like 3 days on the bounce. And I think it was because on the first day, during this time I said, look, no one else is going to eat that today. I'll have it today. I'll help the lads out. I'll eat a bag of scran that no one wants. I'll eat it and just be a good guy.
I think he requested it on the first day.
That's the only time he ever requested something before being asked.
No.
Brought it up.
I was doing it. It was like chewing on bloody concrete. And I did lose half a tooth at some point, and it was probably on the black bean and chicken and noodles meal.
Will, you mentioned there that you were injured and that's why you were ill on that particular meal. Just tell us, if you can, about, I mean, you were fairly in a lot of pain on a lot of this trip, weren't you? Tell us a bit about the injury and the pain.
Well, it was caused by sitting on the seat, which was wet and covered in salt, for 12 hours a day. And after a week or so, I developed a really bad rash on my rear end. I'm assuming it turned into boils or spots or something, which then burst, because when I started to feel some serious pain from it, I asked Junior to take a look at it, and he said, oh man, you've got holes in your bum cheeks. It looks like craters. Doesn't look good at all. So obviously I was a bit worried, and it was starting to really hurt. So I started a course of antibiotics, which we had. We had a big like medical kit with everything we could possibly need. And I started taking some strong painkillers, which my body didn't react well to. It ended up causing problems in itself. But just having to sit down on the seat for 3 hours at a time and row became quite a problem at the end of the shift. The last couple of weeks, I was in absolute agony. Couldn't sit on the seat. You know, the lads helped me out, Brucey and Nutty. They split one of my shifts, which meant I got an extra 6 hours head down, I think, which really helped. And then I could recover from the tramadol, which had made me ill, and my bum was a little bit less sore.
What kept you going, Will? It's a physical challenge, it's a mental challenge, but being in extraordinary pain is just something else on top of that, isn't it? What thoughts kept you going that made you realise that you just got to push through it?
Well, first of all, I've got no choice, because if I don't row, then the lads have got to row for me. It's impossible for that to happen for an extended period of time. And we all experience pain at various points, and even if it's just Junior making me laugh or something, or having a little few minutes just to say, like, right, let's just focus now, like, you know, let me try and adjust my seat a little bit, which I was probably doing far too often again on Junior's nerves. But just trying to find like a comfortable position, because we had sheepskins and we had roll mats, which we were like sort of layering on top of the seats to try and take the pressure off, because it's just a hard wooden plank with a little sort of bicycle seat material on top of it. I don't know, I just had to think, right, it's just only pain for 3 hours, and then I got 3 hours back laying down. Little chunks, I guess, just try and combat it that way.
Nutty, you're away for 49 days with very, very little sleep. How did you find the sleep deprivation?
It took about a week to get used to initially. I was quite tired at first. You get into a rhythm of it, 3 hours on, 3 hours off, a bit like Groundhog Day. You have a set thing that you do, and sometimes it would be too hot during the day to sleep, so you just like twiddle your thumbs. But it was nice to get off the oars for a bit for those 3 hours. You jump back on, and then, initially the first week was a bit interesting to get used to.
The bond that must exist between you four, Brucey, must be incredible, having gone through all this together.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest motivating factor on the row. If you ever got into a moment when you were tempted to, not say give up, but not put in enough effort, because the other people are relying on your effort, it's a team effort, just like you're relying on their effort.
Junior, tell me about the most amazing moments for you. You went through storms, but you also experienced some magical moments out there, didn't you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'd describe it as magical. There was a night somewhere during the middle where the stars were all out, seeing hundreds of shooting stars within a 3-hour period. The moon was out, shining across the sea. We also had some tuna fish that followed us pretty much the whole way across. But this one night in particular, the bioluminescence, the most I'd ever seen on the trip, where either a foot either side of the boat was just glowing green all night with the tuna fish swimming. A pod of dolphins decided to follow us that one evening as well, where they kept breaching up beside us the whole night. And then also we had a whale following us that night as well that kept breaching up around the boat through different moments during the night, and only describe it as magical, really. And then as the sun rised in the morning, it was a beautiful sunrise, I decided to stick my head over the side of the boat and have a look. And just as I did, the whale come right underneath the boat. And as I looked over, the whale come in between all these dolphins and then left again, swam off. And that was the last that we've seen of the whale. The whale actually followed us for about 3 days solid. It was pretty cool.
Brucey, you weren't so keen on the whale. Why?
Well, it's nice to see a whale, right? But I was deeply unnerved, like, because I just thought one little flip of one fin or something, and that could be it. Yeah. Could be flipping the boat, but he was all right in the end.
You weren't having a David Attenborough moment then at that point, like Junior clearly was.
That was really nice to see all the bioluminescence and the fish and whatnot. But the whale, and yeah, that was a bit much.
It was pretty close to the boat at some point, to be fair. Like, it was right at the end of the oars.
10 feet away from the end of the oars. So it was a bit unnerving for me.
I remember there was one night, that same night shift I'm talking about. Oh, no, it was the next day. The next day, I didn't know the whale would still be following us. I was like, Brucey, do you mind if I swim with the whale at some point? If the whale turns up tonight or turns up today, can I go for a swim? Brucey's like, no. Okay. Yeah. I was hanging out to just jump in the sea and swim with this whale.
Will, what was that particular few days like for you when it was like that?
Oh, it was like nothing I've ever experienced before, as Junior's described it. But obviously being in, it was right in the middle as well. It was like, I think we'd just gone past the halfway point. So we were 1,500 miles away from land on in either direction. And just having that in your head while you're looking at like the entire cosmos, because there's obviously no light pollution, just rowing through completely still water. It's like a massive pond, no sound. It's like the most silent place I've ever been to. If we stopped rowing for a second and, you know, didn't make any noise, you just couldn't hear anything. I could hear my ears, the blood in my ears ringing. It was like that, quiet. So just like rowing through space, really. It was like nothing I've ever experienced before.
And how did you sort of occupy the time? I mean, when you were rowing, were you chatting? Were you listening to music? What was it like?
We're chatting a lot because after 2 weeks, our Spotify account stopped working. We didn't know. Your phone needs to connect to an internet signal. And if it doesn't, after 14 days, it pauses your account. So me and Nutty spent about the best part of a day downloading all this music and podcasts and stuff to listen to because we've got Bluetooth speakers on the boat. But we only had that for 2 weeks. So for the remaining 5 weeks, we just had each other's chat. But it actually turned out all right in the end. Like I wasn't massively, like I love music. So at first I was fretters, but in the end it turned out quite nicely because, you know, maybe we would have had music playing in that moment when we're going through the really quiet bit. And I think it was nice that it was just, you know, me and Junior when we were rowing, it was just us two, like, it was quite romantic, wasn't it? Might not have been the same with music. And then, you know, we were, you know, it's like we're with the lads in the middle of the ocean. This is our world. It's like nothing for 1,500 miles in either direction.
I'd sing to you a few times.
Oh, yeah, we had a few sing songs and a lot of whistling.
So true, actually. That's a really good point Will makes there, is that you can hear so much. You can even hear when a tuna fish jumps out of the water quite far away as well. And you look immediately over towards it and you see this tuna fish straight out and then down again.
Yeah, we might have missed that, all that sort of stuff if we had music blaring.
Yeah, I think you would have, wouldn't you?
Your perception of the passage of time as well. Because when you listen to an audiobook or a song, you know, that's like 3 minutes long, or you know how fast someone's speaking. When you're rowing in silence, 3 hours can feel like 20 minutes.
Yeah. That did happen on a few occasions, wasn't it, when we were rowing?
Yeah,
Night, wasn't it? Yeah, especially at night.
Yeah.
Where that whole sense of time just went.
Yeah, sort of like that.
And flying fish caused a few problems, didn't they, Junior?
Yeah, not too many problems. But during the beginning, flying fish, you'd get a couple every shift jump on the boat. You just throw them off and the tuna fish jump up and they'll have them. But towards the end, you'd literally get hundreds of flying fish hit you during the space of like 3 hours. And you'd literally spend all your time chucking fish off. So when it got ridiculous towards the end, you'd just be like, right, just ignore the flying fish. And you're flapping around you all night, dying. And then when the sun would come up, you'd literally get rid of them, feed the fish or feed the birds. You'd chuck them in, the fish will have them. But yeah, you get hit in all sorts of places. And there was one night I was feeling a bit tired and I was on the oars and got smashed in the head. And I turned around to Will. I was like, did you just bloody punch me? Did you just hit me? And he's like, why would I hit you? He's like, it's a fish. It's a flying fish. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry about that, mate. Sorry.
Is that what sleep deprivation does to you as well?
Yeah, it can make, yeah, it does have a little effect on you. Sometimes you're not thinking completely straight all the time. And sleep on the boat was crazy. I'd have the most craziest dreams. I felt like I'd wake up sometimes in panic thinking I was locked in a cage and I was panicking trying to get out. And then I'd open the door, lock it nutty and get hit with a wave and then realize, oh, I'm on a boat and shut the door. And that would happen quite a lot. There'd be other times where I'd go into my cabin, fall asleep for like 20 minutes, wake up and I'm like, oh my God, I'm late. And I'd quickly get dressed into all my wet clothes and then I'd come out. And Nutty would turn around to me and be like, what are you doing? I'm like, mate, I'm sorry, I'm late. He's like, mate, you got 2.5 hours, yeah? I'm like, no, you just woke me up. No, I didn't. I'm sure you just woke me up. I'm sure you just woke me up. I didn't, mate. And I'm like, all right.
Was there that whole sense of waking each other up? When you'd finished your shift, did you then sort of knock gently on the cabin door and wake the other two up to get them to take over?
So I'm glad I was paired up with Will, but I'm glad I was always doing my changeover with Nutty because I like a cuddle. And who doesn't? Who doesn't like a cuddle? And I'd wake Nutty up, I'll give him a little knock. Are you right, Nutty, mate? Are you on in 10 minutes? And he'd be like, oh, cheers. You know, what's the weather like? I'm like, sunny, mate. Sunny. Oh, it's a bit wet out here tonight. You may want to put on your fowlies. All right, cheers. As we do a quick change of it, it was calm enough. Sometimes I'd be like, give him a big cuddle and a big squeeze. And then on the opposite end, there was no in the middle between us. Just watching Brucey and Will wake each other up. It's like 10 minutes, 10 minutes. And I was like, I would hate to be waking up. And at least Nutty knew, like, I'll wake Junior up gently.
We were efficient.
He'd just wake me up nice because he'd know sometimes it would take me a minute or two to realise where I am. Sometimes I'd wake up and I wouldn't know what was going on where I was.
So you've been out there for 40-something days, Brucey, and you spot Barbados in the distance. What was that moment like for you when you realised that you're getting close to land?
Not as happy as you would have thought, because about a week before that I knew we were coming into the last week and the boat was going fast. We had a bit of current behind us. The wind behind us, and we were doing about 10 miles every shift, which is over 3 knots, which was fantastic. And I was already feeling like we'd already made it by that point. We've been striking distance of the island. And then we went through the last about 3 days of sluggish water, like current was going against us. There was no wind. And it was such a high point, like 7 days before we got there. And then I was so upset that we were now doing about 1 knot. The excitement had already been taken away. And then when I saw Barbados, I wasn't ready to get that happy again until we were actually in the port at the other end.
Now, I bet you were blummin' happy when you actually stepped off that boat. I'd like to hear from all of you, starting with Will, if I can. Will, what was that moment like when the boat came in? You've got friends and family on the beach, a bit of a welcoming committee. What did it feel like stepping off onto dry land?
It's obviously a great feeling, having spent 49 days, 19 hours and 45 minutes on that small boat, to be able to get off on land and it be in Barbados, which is, I hadn't really considered what Barbados was like because we had such a mammoth journey ahead of us. I was just thinking about the row. So, you know, I didn't really look into what Barbados was like. So obviously it was nice. I knew it'd be like palm trees and nice beaches, but where we came into Port St. Charles was a nice place to come into and to have all the families there. They came out on a boat and met us. We rowed in the last mile with the families on a boat next to us and, you know, it was just nice and relaxed. The sun was coming up. It was really emotional and nice.
Junior, you hadn't actually been standing up at all for 49 days. Physically, what was it like getting out of the boat?
Well, I was the last man off the boat. And I watched Brucey jump off, first of all. I watched him crawl along this wooden jetty. And I'm like, what's he playing at? And then I watched Nutty and Will both jump off. Nutty jumping off like Spider-Man. Will jumping off and crawling along this little wooden jam because he didn't want to fall back in the water. There was a bit of a drop. And I was watching him crawling. I was like, these guys have got to be winding me up. They've had a little chat when I've not been listening and said, let's wind up Junior or something. And then I jumped off the boat myself and fell over straight away. I was like, bloody hell. I'm going to crawl along this jetty till we get to this concrete platform, the same as what the rest of the lads done. We were then washing ourselves down with a hose pipe within like 2 minutes of being on land. The Coast Guards let us use our hose pipe. So we had four naked Marines struggling to stand up. Haven't had a proper wash in nearly 50 days and falling all over the place with a hose pipe. You know, it was crazy. I think it took about 3 days for me to stop falling over. For about 3 days, I kept falling over and walking into things. But yeah.
Nutty, did you feel a huge sense of achievement and pride when you arrived?
Yeah, really happy. I turned to each of the lads at the end and I was like, thanks very much. Cheers, lads. You know, it was great.
And what was the thing that you wanted most or that you'd missed most?
Cold lager.
Cold lager. What about you,
and
Brucey?
A full English breakfast.
Oh, a full English breakfast and cold lager. Perfect.
Couple of full English breakfasts and probably about 3 pints of tea when I finished.
Brucey, what about you?
Yeah, I just wanted to drink a couple of pints in the pub with the hombres because we made the mistake of not bringing any alcohol on board the boat. Probably really more space efficient to bring spirits. Just for like a little bit of an Irish coffee in the evening, not to go too crazy, obviously, because it's in the middle of the ocean. But
that sounds like a bit like a schoolboy error to forget to take something for your nightcap in the evening. Well, what were you looking forward to most?
Well, we forgot to take good coffee with us, which I was deeply regretting the whole way because I love coffee. It's something we probably could have taken, but was looking forward to the coffee and obviously a shower, a nice bed.
Yeah, a nice bed. That would have been top of my list. What about you, Junior?
Two things. Creme brulee. Yeah, love that. Love that stuff. Yeah, and I don't know, it was weird. I wasn't looking forward to coming off the boat because it becomes your reality at the time. And I'd say getting on the boat, doing stuff like this was like my escape from reality, my everyday reality. Coming off the boat, I felt sad.
And although you had friends and family there from talking to you earlier, I think you all felt that sense, didn't you, that you missed your sort of alone time or were craving some time to just have some beers together and to talk?
Yeah, just sometimes you don't speak on the boat, other times you talk a lot, other times you fall out, a lot of the time it's okay. But we spent so much time together in Gran Canaria and even back in England, we spent a lot of time together before the row. So a lot of time in England, a lot of time in Gran Canaria, then rowed for almost 2 months together. And then when we got to the other side, all I was like really craving was for all of us to get together, have a drink with no one at all, and just ourselves, and just see how we were doing after that and just make sure that we were all okay. But it was pretty overwhelming when we got there with the media or the crowd, people cheering us on and everyone wanting to talk to us. And I just felt like my head wasn't in the right place. I just wanted to sit down with my mates, have a beer, have a chat. And that didn't happen, unfortunately, for like another week, really, till we could all get together.
You are this extraordinary band of brothers and you've formed this incredible team. What next? Can you see yourself doing another challenge together for the Royal Marines charity?
Yeah, we got plenty of ideas in the pipeline, also including another ocean row, maybe the Pacific this time, like San Francisco to Hawaii, similar distance. Another nice island to visit at the other end.
Yeah.
We've got a few ideas about some Arctic exploration as well. Junior's paddling the length of the Amazon source to sea in a kayak, which would be amazing. So yeah, there's plenty of options.
And Will, is there anything you'd like to say, last word to you, to the people who supported you financially and have made donations to the Royal Marines charity at a time when all charities are really hurting?
Yeah, it's difficult to put into words our appreciation for all the support and help that we've had, and obviously everyone who's donated and everyone who's helped us get to the start line, get it done. Because after we set off, you know, there was just a huge amount of support which we didn't realize had been brewing until we finished, you know, and we realized we were just massively overwhelmed by the support and all truly humbled by it. Like, we had a little WhatsApp group for all our friends and families, and that completely took off. Everyone was really invested in it and, you know, really trying to do everything possible to help us gain as much exposure and raise as much awareness and raise as much money for the Royal Marines charity. Words can't describe how appreciative we are of it all. So a huge thank you to everyone who's supported us, basically.
And tell everyone that if they've got a spare £5, just go on Google and type in Royal Marines charity. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward to put a fiver on there.
It makes a massive difference, doesn't it?
A huge difference.
Yeah, a huge difference. Sure. Yeah, every penny helps.
Really, really helps the lads.
Their families.
Families as well, for the rest of their life. It's a great charity.
That's a perfect place to end. I'd like to thank you, Brucey, Will, Junior, and also Nutty. You've been fantastic guests. We've got a one-show exclusive going out as well on this. So massive congratulations. You did a fantastic job. And you must keep me posted for your next challenge. Can't guarantee I'll come with you. If I do, we're definitely having coffee and alcohol for our, our late night.
I'm making up for it now.
Yeah, exactly. But honestly, brilliant stuff, guys. You did a brilliant, brilliant job. And I hope you feel very proud of what you've achieved. And take a minute out to pat yourselves on the back.
Thank you, Heather.
Cheers. Thank you. Cheers.
You've been listening to Marines Will Schwepp, Junior McElhinney, Sam Edwards and David Bruce, who rowed 3,000 miles in a small boat across the Atlantic for the Royal Marines charity, who supported both Will and Junior when they were seriously injured on Operation Herrick in Afghanistan and honourably discharged. Download our series at convex.podbean.com or search The Convex Conversation on Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts, or simply ask Alexa. I'll see you next week with another great guest. Bye for now.